Welcome in Braves Today, bravestoday.com. He's Lindsey Crosby. I'm Ben Taylor. Lindsey, good, bad, ugly. We may cover some indifferent. I'm not real sure. But let's start with the good, even though the Braves lose the series to the Cardinals, and that is Lopez and Kelnick, in my opinion. And we'll go ahead and start with Kelnick because right now he seems to be the over at least the last couple of days, well, the last 3 days, he's the hottest hitter in baseball. Because they can't seem to get him out. And he actually, they threw that stat out during the game that the Cardinals have not had anybody do that well in a three-game series against him since Tony Gwynn. If you haven't heard that name in a while.
What a comparison.
Yeah,
I put it in the takeaways from the doubleheader. I made the executive decision to just do one set of takeaways for both games on Wednesday. Kelnick has a 916 OPS in the past 15 days. In the last 30 days, his OPS is 879. And in the month of June, MLB.com has his stats for the month of June because they update right away. He's batting 321 in the month of June.
Yep.
So he's having a great, 21 games, 5 homers, scored 9 runs, 13 RBI. The thing for me is since he became an everyday player, it really feels like he's picked up in just about every single respect. He has 6 hits, 4 RBI on Wednesday. He goes 2-for-3 off of lefty Matthew Liberatore, who no other Brave could, and I'm not making a joke, no other Brave could get hits off of Matthew Liberatore. And so it's to me, it feels like he got into the supportive environment. You talk about this a lot, about like the clubhouse and just the expectations and all of that. He got in the supportive environment, and once he was able to get his feet wet and not have the pressure of having to carry the team, he started off batting 8th or 9th. And then as injuries happened, obviously Ronald Acuña Jr., and then he became an everyday player. Michael Harris goes out, then he becomes the leadoff man. He's grown into that. You can see why he was a top 5 prospect in baseball.
There's no doubt.
And I would go on a limb and say if Jared Kelnick continues hitting like this, but Michael Harris comes back, they're not going to put him back at leadoff.
Right.
Kelnick would stay at leadoff for the rest of the season. And if he continues doing this all year, I think before you have to go to arbitration with him, I think you end up, Atlanta ends up signing him to an extension. This is the kind of situation that you've seen Atlanta go in before. And they've said, we're going to sign this guy long-term. He gets more money than he would have made over arbitration. We get more cost certainty than we would have during the arbitration process. It feels like that's where we're heading. I know that feels like an overreaction, but you've got 20-something games of a sample in June. You've seen what he's able to do when he's in a supportive environment. In a good lineup. I'm not saying sign him now. I don't think they will because of the financial concerns this team has. We've talked about that before, about how little money they have to spend. But it feels like you're in for a season of him finishing the season, batting in the high twos with double-digit home runs and steals.
Yep.
And then they end up turning around and signing him to an extension in the offseason. It just feels like that's where we're heading, and I love it.
We didn't make a prediction that he would have a series like this, but we said when this pickup got made, how much you and I liked it because he just wasn't happy in Seattle. The talent has been there. People forget, we talked about it. He either had, what was it? I know he had the longest home run last year. I think he had like the longest 3 last year in the American League or something like that.
They went through and showed the longest home run in every ballpark last year. And like 3 of them were Jared Kelnick home runs in different away parks when he was traveling with the Mariners. So the power's there, and we've seen him. He's hit 4 home runs in the last like 10 games. We've seen it starting to come out there when he's getting pitches to hit. And it's just, this was the change in scenery that he needed, the change of environment, the support that he needed. I'm happy for him. I'm happy for us.
Yeah.
Because honestly, this was kind of, yes, you spent $13 million or so in taking on bad contracts to get him. But outside of that, this was pretty much a steal for you from the Mariners, especially because the guy you traded them, the prospect you traded them, just had his second Tommy John surgery and still has not thrown in professional baseball. So you kind of got him for almost nothing.
Well, and even with, before all the Tommy John and before all that, the Mariner people were jumping in our mentions. If you remember when we did one of our first pods about Kelnick coming over, and they were talking about best of luck. We love the guy. Clearly the organization treated him like crap. I hope he does well. So he's doing exactly what even Mariners fans thought he would do. So good for him. I'm happy for him. I hope he's happy as well. Another good, as far as the good, bad, and ugly is concerned, that was in game one of the doubleheader. Lopez continues to be one of the best pitchers in baseball. If you look down the list right now, eligible pitchers right now are that qualify. There are the list of pitchers under a 2 ERA is one. It's Lopez. That's it. That's your list.
And to explain that qualification thing, because a lot of fans have gotten mad about they'll see an ERA leader list and he's not in there. To explain that, you have had to have pitched one inning per game your team has played. And the way Atlanta's giving Ronaldo Lopez extra rest, he's right there on that line. When he finishes his outing, he is a qualified pitcher. And over the next 4 or 5 games, he falls just under the qualifying line to get recognized when you pull the official stats from MLB of the league leaders. And then when he makes his start, he gets enough innings to go back above the line and qualify. So it feels like everybody's pulling these lists when he's not qualified, and they're not pulling him when he is. So just know that it's not MLB intentionally deciding to slight Atlanta. It's just the way that this breaks out with the number of innings he's pitched and the amount of rest, the extra rest that Atlanta is making sure that they give him and Chris Sale every single time out. I don't think Lopez has pitched a single game on regular rest all year. It's almost always five days or sometimes 6. And he said he appreciates that. He definitely can tell it's helping. Yep. And this is their goal, to not make him have to move to the bullpen for innings later in the year. They want him to be available all season. Obviously, he's pitching really well. You want him to be. This is how you do it. And the downside of it is he sometimes falls out of the qualification list right when they go and they pull it to write an article about it.
Yeah, and that's probably going to happen a little bit later on this week too, so you guys keep that in mind if you're paying attention to the national pundits. However, he did look good in game one. I mean, against a team that, let's call it what it is, there have been some people that kind of scoffed at the Cardinals, but they're in second place behind the Brewers. I mean, they're not a bad ball club.
Yeah. The big thing to me, and he talked about this after the game, you can tell that he really learned a lot from not working out at the start of the first time and having to move to the bullpen. And he talked about this. He loaded the bases twice, the second inning and the fifth inning. He didn't have his best stuff today. I mean, I think he had, it was like 4 walks in the 5 innings. But despite loading the bases twice, he gave up a grand total of 2 runs. Yep. And in the second inning, there was 1 out when he loaded the bases. In the fifth inning, there was no outs when he loaded the bases. And he got out of both of those situations with a grand total of 2 runs scored, both of them on sac flies. And it's just, it kind of shows that, like, Alex Anthopoulos knows more than us. Because we all talked about, is this going to work? Can he win the number 5 starting job over Bryce Elder? And when do you have to move him back to the bullpen? And instead, not only did he win the number 5 job, if you could go back and redo everything, he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. Like you said, he's the only pitcher who's qualified with an ERA under 2. Only one.
And it's amazing with a 1.7, so it's pretty important. That's the good. Speaking of good, be sure to go to plainscoffee.com. Promo code Braves, get your 10% off. All kinds of flavored coffees as well as teas if you don't like coffee. They honestly don't even roast the beans until you make your order and they ship it right to your door. It's plainscoffee.com. Promo code Braves, 10% off. All right, I say good, bad, and ugly. Now I'm going to go bad. That's going to be Bryce Elder for me. And the reason being is because the guy can't win baseball games. And I just have gotten to the point where I've given up on him and I have mailed it in.
Okay. I want to fight you on this. I legitimately disagree with you on this. I thought tonight was the closest we have seen to pre-All-Star break Bryce Elder since the All-Star break last year.
Right.
And so I wrote about this 2 weeks ago. In the takeaways, I linked back to that piece. In AAA, he was getting a lot more strikeouts, and it all kind of came back. He upped his velocity. He's throwing like 2 mile an hour harder than he was. You look at tonight, he's right there at 28-29% called strikes plus whiffs, which is right around MLB average. Picks up 11 whiffs. He's throwing 92 on the four-seam fastball, 91 and change on the sinker. The hardest he's been. 4 hits, no walks. And I think that's the best thing for Bryce Elder. When you look at the pitch map of where he left his pitches, there is a lot of stuff in the zone, but there's a lot of stuff right below the zone. I do think that this is a much better version of Bryce Elder than what we saw down the stretch last year when he was admittedly tired, than what we saw early in this year when he didn't have his locations in, he didn't have the control that he needs to. And, like, honestly, he didn't get the win today. He took the loss. He didn't give up any, like, he gave up 2 runs. He didn't get any run support. It was a quality start. I will never complain when a pitcher gives us a quality start. And I think as Braves fans, we're sometimes a little bit spoiled for a number 5 pitcher to give you 6 innings with no walks and 2 runs. 29 teams would take that every 5th day, no questions.
Noted. respect your elder, Lindsey Crosby. However, I will say, as I'm looking, you see me squinting towards my computer right now. I'm looking. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's an L out there beside his name. So
they didn't score any runs. I mean, Atlanta had 2 hits while he was in the game, both from Jaron Kelenic. Like, at one point in time, the Cardinals had 15 consecutive batters retired while Bryce Elder was in the game. Like, what is he supposed to do when you don't have a base runner for 5 innings?
And I debated on that, going on the good, bad, and ugly. I was going to throw the bad out there to you and say, you know, not just Bryce Elder, but a combination of Bryce Elder and lack of run support that the Braves are not giving some of our good pitchers. There have been other pitchers that have kind of either taken a no decision because everybody decided not to start hitting until the 7th inning. And then by that time, the starter's out, and it's either 0-0 or the other team's leading 1-0.
For a while, A.J. Minter was leading baseball in wins because he didn't score runs until the 8th inning. Like, that's when they took the lead so many times in April, and so he racked up like 5 wins in the first month of the season.
And this team seems to be so bipolar in that sort of thing, because you play 2 games in one day. One game you throw a bunch of runs up on the board, and then the next game, you know, you're having to depend on the hot guy that's got the only 2 hits for him. So my thing with Bryce, and the reason I also stick it out as being bad, is I wonder if this team, I don't want to necessarily gives up on him, but how many times do they keep bringing him up from minor league? Because at some point you got to stop doing that. So when did they make the decision? All right, we believe in you. We're keeping you up here. Or sorry, you're finishing the season down at AAA.
Yeah, I know our managing editor, Noah Griffith, is writing a story now about, does Bryce Elder deserve another start? And for me, the team's worked so hard to try to keep a 6-man rotation. And I think that right now, if you had to pick a 6th guy for your rotation, it's Bryce Elder. And just based on what he did today, now he's going to slip up. We know he's going to slip up. Does he have enough good starts before that slip up where they keep going back to him? And if you run into a workload issue or just a kind of a fatigue issue with Spencer Schwellenbach, I think Bryce Elder could potentially be that 5th guy. Because if you look at the other options you have, Hurston Waldrop's on the IL, A.J. Smith-Shawver's on the IL.
Yeah.
They seemingly don't trust Dylan Dodd. He added a sweeper. I think he's a better pitcher than he was when we saw him early last year, but they seemingly don't trust him. They've already tried Darius Vines and Alan Winans. They haven't really wanted to bring them back up recently. There's not a ton of other options, and Bryce Elder right now looks like the improved velocity, the better control and command is working out. I think he's going to go back down after this game. He was the designated 27th man.
Right. Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
But I think that they're going to try and find a time to bring him back up and use him again. And it's June 26th. I would assume by the end of July, he at least gets 1 more start. And I only say the end of July simply because you have off days because of the All-Star break. And so who quite knows how your rotation is going to shake out. But I feel confident in saying they're going to use him some more. I think tonight's outing showed whatever he's done to improve his velocity, to get the better command with his smoother mechanics, they're a believer. The fact that they were going to, according to Justin Toscano of the AJC, they were going to bring him up for today's start, even if there wasn't a doubleheader.
Yes. Yes.
So, like, they obviously believe that this stuff I wrote about 2 weeks ago, they believe this is real. I think they're going to use Bryce Elder more than maybe we expected. And my hope is that the fans realize this isn't the same Bryce Elder that put up a 5.5 ERA down the stretch last year. He looks like he's a better version of that guy. And so hopefully the fans have a little more grace with him and don't hold this loss against him because he literally had a quality start.
The ugly. And this could be recency bias. I'm not real sure. However, it looks like over about the last month or so, it's been really bad. Adam Duvall has just seemed to have been a hole in the lineup as of late.
Yeah.
And I you know, and I say that just because the average is down. I mean, I told you when you look back at like the last, I don't know, 10 plus games, he's had zero multi-hit games. So even when he's got a hit, that's it. So if he gets a hit at his first at bat, that's it. He's not getting another one the rest of the game. So he's used – Barney Fife has used his bullet. It's over.
So I will – I'll fight a little bit on this. Like, I'll admit that, like, when you watch Adam Duvall, he looks like he's lost a step in the out. This is not the same Adam Duvall that they felt like they could plug into center field in 2021 and use in center field and not really have to worry about it. They did defensive sleeve swap, you know, late in games for Guillermo Heredia. Hard to say that name for some reason. but at the same time, and Justin Toscano, again, of the AJC, I keep talking about him, wrote a piece. He talked to Adam Duvall the other day. And Adam Duvall was talking about, like, he's a fly ball hitter. He hits the ball hard. He's kind of had some of the same issues we talked about with Matt Olson, with Austin Riley. After Justin wrote that, I pulled the numbers. Adam Duvall has the single largest difference in baseball between his actual slugging percentage, 298, which is awful, and his expected slugging percentage of 437. It's 139 is the difference in those two. That is the single largest difference in baseball. So when you look at the quality of the baseballs he's hit versus the results he's getting, there's a huge gap. Batting average, I don't think it's the biggest gap, but it's up there in like the top 10. It's almost 50 points of difference in batting average. And this is kind of the same thing. We talked about this with Matt Olson. We talked about this with Austin Riley about how they were hitting the ball hard and they weren't getting the results. And we've said, okay, yeah, they've turned around. They're looking a lot better. Matt Olson has like 320 at-bats right now, or plate appearances. Austin Riley has like 270 plate appearances right now. Adam Duvall has 190. And so he hasn't had it, like, he hasn't had that luck change the way that everybody else has had that luck change. I do think he is better than he's shown. I will admit he has struggled this year. I don't necessarily think that he's an everyday player, but I also don't think he's as bad as we kind of perceive him to be. He is still batting almost 260 against lefties. Mm-hmm. He is under 100 against righties. He's Marcell Ozuna in April of 2023 bat against righties. Yes. But he's batting like almost 260 with six homers in like 40 games against righties. I'm sorry, against lefties. So there's a role for him. You've seen them do this, Forrest Wall against lefties. Forrest Wall against righties, him against lefties. And I think as that luck starts to turn, you may see him start playing more. And while I still think they'll go out and they'll get a corner outfielder, I don't think it's as dire as everybody thinks that you have to get him out of the lineup completely. I think there's still a role for him, and the skills are still there. It's just not yet showing in the results.
Yeah, that 170 with a total of like 10 extra base hits. I think he's got six bombs four doubles. But other than that, and so it just, I'm with you that whole everyday, he's being asked to play more every day. And because of, you mentioned right there at the beginning, his step that he's lost in the outfield probably. I'm not so sure he might not have lost that step. Maybe he needs to shorten up. Maybe he needs to change his approach. I know he says he hits the ball hard. I know he says he's a fly ball hitter. Hey, that's great. Balls are softer now. We've clearly said that. And you may be a step behind. So maybe you not ought to be swinging for the fences. Maybe we need to start talking about just putting the ball in play. Because if you're going to hit it hard, put it hard in a gap somewhere. Because
he also,
that's what stuck out in my mind. He was, in my opinion, I don't have the stats in front of me from the last couple of years. But when he's been with the team, he seemed like a double machine. Even when he came in and pinched hit, it seemed like, hey, he could get something in the gap and grab a double, or something off the wall and grab a double. And now he's got four.
Here's the hard part with that. His barrel rate is almost 12%. It's like 80-something percentile in baseball. Like, it's the same argument we had about Riley and Olsen. He's doing everything right. He's just not getting the results, especially against righties. And how much can you let him play almost every day and figure it out? Obviously, the team doesn't feel like they can do that. But I do still think that given enough at-bats, it's going to normalize. The question is, can you afford to do that while you're also missing Michael Harris, while you're also missing Ronald Acuña Jr.? Can you afford to get it, – it's like the fifth or sixth. Can you afford to give these quad A pitchers or these prospects starts every fifth or sixth day when you're trying to win the division? Can you afford to let Adam Duvall work out of it by playing every day? Or do you have to do like Snit did and start platooning him and only have him play against lefties? Like, that's the other situation you're in, right?
Really quickly, not much of a preview that we need to do because it's just one game. However, a lot of people may not realize this one game is kind of an important game against the White Sox because it could mean the difference in you losing two series in a row or losing a series and then bouncing back and grabbing a series, and that's because this is a makeup snow game.
Yeah, this is a makeup of the April 3rd series finale against the White Sox. It was snowed out that day. So Chris Sale takes on his former team. He's facing off prospect Drew Thorpe. The game is at 4:10 Eastern time on Thursday. So they played a doubleheader today. They're flying tonight from St. Louis to Chicago, going to the hotel room. They'll play that game, and then after that game, they'll fly back to Atlanta to start a homestand against the Pirates on Friday. So, if you lose this game because you split the series, you split the first two games of the series early in the year. If you lose this game, you lose the series, which means you lose two straight series after one more loss. So
I will say this really quickly. I'm not picking against Chris Sale. Not right now. Not the way he's throwing the ball. So,
dude's 10-2. I'm not picking against him against his former team. Are you kidding? No.
He will be so – I don't care if he didn't sleep, but he would be so jacked up for that game. I am looking for – he's a competitor. There's no chance I pick against Chris Sale. So it should be
– full disclosure, I have not pulled these stats. I'm willing to bet Chris Sale has never lost a game to the White Sox since he left that team. Just like he didn't lose to the Red Sox when he played them earlier in the year. Yeah. I'm willing to bet he's never lost to the White Sox.
I'm looking forward to that and the weekend and finally getting back home and hopefully the darn bats get going, man. I mean, that's and I get it. They kind of came alive there late, but I have, you know, you mentioned it. The run support Elder did not get. Let's try to get something going in the first three or four innings instead of waiting till the seventh or eighth to try to mount a comeback. This isn't the comeback team that we saw last year. It's just not.
It was a spot start against a kitchen sink lefty, a guy who throws six. Matthew Liberatore throws like six different pitches. Hang on. I have it up right here. Yeah, he threw six different pitches on Wednesday night. So, like, at a certain time, a guy you don't have a scouting report against. I get struggling a little bit. I don't see two hits against him struggling. But, I think they'll do better this weekend. Although, you do face Paul Skeens this weekend.
I know. I'm looking forward
Saturday.
To it.
Yep, Freed versus Skeens on Saturday. That's going to be a great matchup.
And I can't wait till next week because we need to win the series because I have a recap with our resident Pirate fan. Daryl Dapprich will be on with me, and he hates how I call them the Pirates. So I'll go ahead and throw that out right now that the Braves taking on the Pirates over the weekend. And so we'll have a follow-up pod either Sunday night or Monday morning recapping the Pirates series. It's all been brought to you by Plains Coffee. Go to plainscoffee.com, promo code Braves. Get your 10% off. Lindsay's got all kinds of stuff already up on the website. They've already done takeaways, got more that's going to happen throughout the weekend. I'm sure we'll get a Skeens preview just because he seems to be one of the hottest pitchers in baseball right now. So that's just around the corner as well. Lindsay, as always, I greatly appreciate your time, sir.
Thanks, buddy.